Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Second hour of the show. Happy Brewers Outlet Day, everybody. Stock up for the weekend. You may be going to a Halloween party tonight, or maybe you're hosting one, and maybe you just want to stock up for the weekend. That way you've got everything ready for the weekend. Brewers Outlet's the place to go to because they have the best selection of beer anywhere. Imports, domestics, microbrews, you name it, they have it. And at the same time, maybe people enjoy wine coolers or water or soft drinks. They have plenty of that. They roast their Phoenix fresh and hot every day. Bags are right there at the register. Plenty of snacks throughout the store to stock up on. Plus, the pickle bar is just second to none. And Corey knows I love the barrels. I love the dills. I mentioned earlier in the show we were out at Penn's Tavern, and he brought out sliced pickles for me. It was great. Corey, thanks. I have always appreciated that. That was terrific that you did that. But stock up. The holidays are coming up, and it's never too early to stock up on that. You don't want to do anything last second when it comes to that because you never know who's going to be dropping over. Two really fun months coming up starting this weekend. Think about that. Two really fun months. You know, a lot of people enjoy the Halloween parties this weekend. Then you get Thanksgiving, and then you get Hanukkah, Christmas, New Year's. I mean, so many great things coming up over the next couple of months. A lot of fun and plenty of football to watch. So go to Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I am in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Last night, Pitt and Virginia Tech. Dave Fleming with the call on ESPN.
Run plays, it's first and goal. Henderson in motion. They fake it and then give it to the offensive lineman, O'Neal. Touchdown! Well, Brian O'Neal now has caught a touchdown pass, and he's run for six.
He's one of the most athletic offensive linemen, and this time Pitt hit him with an unbalanced look. He's normally a right tackle. Watch him line up over here at left tackle. Talk about the jet sweeps and the reverses and how that's a big part of this offense. Haven't seen it yet. Handed off to the big fella. He had about a 25-yard touchdown catch on a screen against Georgia Tech earlier this season. Not many 6'6", 300-pound guys move as well as he does.
Indeed. What a call last night. Dave Fleming and Jesse Palmer with the call, courtesy of ESPN, as last night O'Neal, the offensive lineman, took it around end on the reverse. The big offensive tackle and scored a touchdown for Pitt. Virginia Tech won the game last night, 39-36. That's our play-by-play call of the day and a beauty. All right, let's bring in Nathan Baird now. He is the beat writer for Purdue football for the Lafayette Journal and Courier. Nathan, welcome. Great to have you with us. And how do you at this time assess the state of the Purdue football program?
Well, it's obviously kind of a point of change, triggered by the firing of head coach Darrell Hazel last Sunday, and it's just a period of transition. They're trying to do some positive things right now in terms of obviously playing out the season. You've got seniors who are playing the last, now it's down to five games of their career, assuming that Purdue doesn't make some kind of a surge, it gets them into a bowl game at this point. And, they're trying to end on a strong note. But more than that, I think you're trying to maybe reverse some things that were going on in the program. And I don't know that they're necessarily the fault of Darrell Hazel, but just maybe spark some things that you can carry some momentum into an off season and into what's going to be even more change when they, hire a new coaching staff to come in here and start rebuilding.
Through all of this, I want to go back to the Nebraska game first. What did you see in the first half of the Nebraska game, and then what changed in the second half?
Well, I think a lot of what we saw could be attributed to sort of the just raw emotion that they were playing with last week that got sort of channeled in a new direction. direction. You know, there's a lot of raw emotion after the coaching change, either coaches who are, you know, or players who are sad to see Coach Hazel fired, or people who maybe feel a little responsible for the fact that they weren't winning games, and that's why this happened. And the coaching staff, they did a good job, I think, of channeling that and getting that emotion onto the field Saturday afternoon. I saw a team that played with more energy. I saw a team that played maybe a little bit more aggressively on both sides of the ball. You saw that in just the way that they came out. They called a trick play on the first play of the game, and it didn't work and led to a touchdown for Nebraska, but they kept fighting and were up at halftime, and I think surprised a lot of people. So a lot of that, I think, was just sort of, again, that sort of surge of energy that got brought into the program by the interim coach, Jared Parker. And I think in the second half, naturally, that dissipated a little bit. On top of that, Nebraska just executed better. They started winning the battle up front on both sides of the ball. Tommy Armstrong was made a little bit more accurate in the passing game than he had been in the first half. And Purdue's offense never really got going in the second half. They've had trouble establishing the run in some Big Ten games this season. So naturally, I think, you know, Nebraska was the better team and was going to just pull away. I think what's important for Purdue is, from an effort standpoint and kind of an energy standpoint, a dynamic standpoint, be able to carry over what they saw in the first half of that game into this week and extend it, get a full game of that kind of level of play.
Yeah, they only ran four plays in Nebraska's territory in the second half of that game. But David Blau has put together some good games, and then, you know, he's been up and down, even though Purdue leads the conference in passing offense at this point. What do you like about him?
Well, I think we've seen things in terms of increased arm strength from him this season. I think we've seen some better decision-making, especially as the season's gone on. Early on, that was still a bit of an issue. He threw five interceptions against Cincinnati, for instance. Mm-hmm. Threw one in the red zone the next week against Nevada. But over the past few weeks, that's gotten better. Still not perfect. I thought one of the best versions of him, though, was the first half of last week. I mean, he was really efficient. If you notice, you know, he's up there in yardage. I forgot to look this week, but I know that going into last week's game, he was leading the conference in total offense, but he wasn't in the top 10 in pass efficiency.
Right.
That was because of the turnovers. It was because of the completion percentage was down in like the mid to low 50s. So as long as he keeps bringing those numbers up, the efficiency will rise. And I think that's what Purdue needs from him. They need, you know, he's not going to necessarily be a guy that goes out and throws bombs and wins games necessarily by himself. But he can manage a game, or actually that's probably selling it a little short. I mean, he's got some skills, especially from the terms of mobile accuracy and things like that. It's just a matter of this offense has such a small margin of error. You can't turn the ball over, and you can't have, you know, some of these other games they've had where they've had multiple three and outs, and some of that has been because of his inaccuracy. So He's still, the thing we have to remember with him is he's still just a sophomore. You know, right. He's within, I don't know, maybe like 12 to 15 career starts still now. And he's been around for so long, you know, being a redshirt freshman starting last year, and now he's been the starter all this year. So it seems like he's been around forever, but really still relatively early in his development as a college football player. So he's definitely taken a step forward this year, but there's room to grow as he just kind of continues and as they hopefully maybe find some more weapons to put around him.
This defense has been hit by a couple of key injuries and also a couple of key suspensions. I'm getting the sense that the suspensions aren't ending anytime soon. So what kind of domino effect has that had on the defense?
Well, the big injury has been Jake Replogle, the defensive tackle up front. They haven't had him in the last two games. We still don't know yet if they're going to have him this week. And they've been much more tight-lipped about injuries since Hazel's firing than Hazel was about injuries. So that's probably going to be something we don't really know about until Saturday morning before the game, as we see them come out and start warming up as far as confirming whether or not what his status is going to be for Saturday. Now, as far as the injuries, as far as the suspensions, they've had two on defense. They actually haven't even labeled them as suspensions, but one of them was their starting nickelback, Brandon Roberts. The other one was one of the reserve corners, David Rose, who was starting to get a little bit more playing time and who they talked about using more. But that was already probably the weakest position on the team coming into the season, was just secondary, the depth there, the talent there. And to lose anybody out of that group has been a blow. You know, last week, they moved DeJuan Hunt, who was their best cornerback, over to that nickel spot. But that exposes them then again on the edge, because now you're using two guys who I'm not sure would necessarily be able to start for any other Big Ten team. That's an area that Purdue has had to address. And really, that's kind of the underlying problem here that led to Daryl Hazel's dismissal was there just isn't enough talent here. They have to find a way to recruit more talent and develop guys, because this year there were so many positions coming into the season where you saw maybe kind of enough first-level talent, but if they suffered any injuries, there was such a drop-off that it was going to be tough for them to keep up in the Big Ten.
What's the attitude about the program right now around town, around the area, alumni?
You know, after the Maryland game and then 2 weeks later after the Iowa game, it had pretty much, I think, bottomed out in terms of the support. I mean, they already weren't drawing crowds, but it was getting pretty vocal in terms of people who were sort of demanding change. And I think one of the reasons that they decided to dismiss Hazel in the middle of the season was maybe to sort as a gesture to the fan base to say, okay, we hear you. We need to make a change. And this is how we're starting it. We're starting this process now. And since the firing, I think, you know, people, as you guys know, fans tend to take all of the possible blame for things that go wrong with the team and put it on the back of the head coach, mm-hmm. especially if it's been a few years. And that's justified sometimes, and sometimes it's not. But
I've noticed
when you take that person out of the equation, now people all of a sudden have all this optimism. Like, oh, well, you've taken away the one thing that was preventing us from winning, and now we can, you know, now we'll move forward and start winning. And as you guys also know, that doesn't happen that easily. So there's definitely an optimism here now that, you know, that some people in administration are saying the right things in terms of the support that's going to be there for Purdue, for football, in terms of money, facilities, those sorts of things. I think the fan base is taking a cautiously optimistic stance, waiting to see what happens with this hire. I know there's a lot of them that are clamoring for some kind of big name or some kind of, you know, hot up-and-coming guy and Purdue to go throw money and get that person. But I think the administration needs to be prudent. The new AD, Mike Bobinski, you know, they've got 6 extra weeks here as opposed to the people who won't make their change till the end of the year. You've got time to do your diligence and go find a unique person who can come in and have a vision and give this program an identity that it hasn't had for the better part of a decade. And that may involve going out and hiring one of those names. It may go out and hiring someone who's off the radar, go out and hire the next hot new coach before everybody knows about him. That's a tough thing to do, but that's a thing maybe Purdue needs to do, because it's a program, an athletic program, that in a lot of ways is always kind of one step behind. And this is their chance to try to jump out in front and make a decision that's going to affect this athletic department for a long time.
Morgan Burke, of course, was there for a long time, did a great job in so many ways, and thus everybody knew him and maybe could get a feel as to what potential direction he might go in. What kind of wild card is it that it's Mike Bobinski and all of you there don't really know him that well?
Oh, absolutely. That's a very valid point, and we don't know him that well. He's only been around a few weeks. We've had sort of limited interactions with him so far. He's obviously been fairly busy with things like this, like, you know, firing a coach and starting that search. So, and on top of that, he doesn't have a long history of hiring football coaches. I mean, he was at Xavier for a while, which doesn't have football.
Right.
He was at Georgia Tech, where they already had a football coach, and someone who, during his tenure, I think they had one big season down there, and they extended Johnson. So he's really just had the one coach there. So this is not something where we can even really look back in his past and say, oh, here's how he's approached this in other situations. I have a feeling they're probably going to hire a search firm. It wouldn't surprise me. Mm-hmm. It may be the same search firm that Purdue hired before it hired Bobinski. So I think this process is still kind of in the early stages of playing out. I wouldn't expect, just because it's hard, if you're going to hire someone who's already coaching somewhere this season, it's hard to really set up those interviews and things, because,
right,
as you know, those guys work 8 days a week at this point. So we may not know anything in terms of concrete names and things on any faster timetable. I just think it's interesting that Purdue made this decision in midseason, which is really out of character for them. That's something that the previous athletic director, I don't think, would have done at all. And now that gives them an extra 6 weeks to more cleanly go out and maybe make some of these inroads and stuff. You're not having to go behind your coach's back now. You get to be more upfront about, we have an opening. We've given college football, the college football world, notice that we're open for business. We're making a big hire, and we're ready to, you know, put this forward. So that could help them in the long run, but we'll see.
Finally, any initial thoughts on Saturday?
Well, I think that things don't change too much for Purdue in terms of what's going to lead to success. You know, they've been, for the past 2 years, one of the worst run defenses in the Big Ten, or actually they were the worst in the Big Ten last year, and they've been back at the bottom again this year. So they've got to find a way to limit Barkley or keep him contained a little bit without getting burned too much by the rest of the offense. But I think that's where it starts. If you got to come out and find a way to slow down the running game. And on the other side of the ball, like we were talking about before, they've just had trouble getting their own running game started. They've got talent there at Markell Jones, but the offensive line's been banged up a little bit. They've got to find a way to stabilize their offense and balance their offense with more of a run game, because that's how they can stay on the field and take some of the pressure off of this defense.
Nathan, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
Nathan Baer, Lafayette Journal and Courier. Great to have him with us on the show today, giving us his perspective on where the Purdue football program is right now. Expect the unexpected tomorrow. Now, Gerard Parker, the interim head coach at Purdue, says, look, we're not going to open up with a trick play, because that's what they did against Nebraska. They opened up with a trick play. They went with a double pass, and Markell Jones then off the second one, off the first pass, then threw it, and they threw an interception. And 22 seconds into the game, Nebraska was winning 7-0. Now, Purdue's credit, they took the lead. A couple big pass plays made a big difference for them in that game. Got down to the 2-yard line on one to Marshall from David Blau, the quarterback. And then it took him 4 plays. They finally got in a pass play to D'Angelo Yancey. Then he had an 88-yard touchdown pass from Blau to Yancey as well, where Yancey caught at the 30 and took it the final 70 yards. And they led the game 14-10 at halftime. But in the second half, it's a little different story. Purdue only ran 4 plays in Nebraska's territory in the second half, and Nebraska at one point from the midpoint of the third quarter into the fourth quarter scored on 3 consecutive possessions, and they won the game. But they're back home, first time they played a home game since the coaching change, and you expect the unexpected in these things. Number one, last week I mentioned the double pass. They ran 2 reverses. They went for it on 4th down 4 different times, made 2 of them, including 1 a touchdown. They ran a fake punt last week. So you expect the unexpected. And as James Franklin said on the show last night, he says, look, he says, we're looking at an onside kick, a bloop kick, everything. They've gone through every scenario. They've talked about this in practice. To expect something crazy out of Purdue, just to, you know, get them going, get the fans going, make it fun, make it more interesting, do something, get some momentum in a game like this. James Franklin decided this week to practice with no noise at practice at all. At practice, there's noise, whether it's a home game or a road game. Now, road game, it's obvious. You practice with noise, plenty of it, pipe it in. The offense has to go through, sometimes on silent counts, hand signals, things like that. You expect that. Now, you're asking, now, why would you practice with noise at home? Because obviously at Beaver Stadium, when the offense is out there and they're calling signals, and as Trace McSorley puts his hands down, tells everybody to quiet down, everyone quiets down. Well, you have to remember that one of the reasons you practice for noise at home is you do it for your defense, because you're loud, crazy, and wild when their offense is out there trying to be disruptive, trying to get a false start, which the Beaver Stadium crowd has done so many times. Well, the defense has to communicate too, so they need noise at home, especially the defense does, to navigate their signals on the defensive side of the ball while you and Beaver Stadium are going crazy. This week, 180 of that. He decided this week that, look, no noise in practice at all. You have to supply the energy. You have to supply the juice, and the players did. And if you notice last night of the Penn State Coaches Show featuring James Franklin, when I asked him last night about how the week went, he said the Tuesday and Wednesday practices were the best back-to-back practices they've had all season. I was there, and I can attest to the fact that I felt the same way. I walked out of there on Tuesday. I thought, well, this is a really good start to the week. I walked out of there Wednesday. I thought, this is a really good week so far. So now it has to translate into tomorrow. It's a noon start. A lot of people get concerned about that. They have their own clock. Team's not going to go over tomorrow. Not going to leave the hotel. We don't leave the hotel tomorrow until, 9:35 tomorrow? But we're not that far away. We're only 10 minutes away, so we'll get to the stadium at 9:45 tomorrow. So they'll get to leave at 9:35 tomorrow. Their pregame meal, I mean, not bad. The wake-up time is at 7:30. The pregame meal is at 8. Team meeting at 9:20. They depart at 9:35, and they're in the locker room at 9:45. Then the game's at noon. So that's how the pregame works tomorrow. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The beverage supermarket imports domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast the peanuts fresh and out every day. The pickle bar is second to none. Stock up now at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Final half hour of the week coming up with the best audience in the world. We think the world of you. And we'll talk to Ryan Snyder, Rivals.com, as we continue here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
True refreshment can come in many forms, but it can only be found in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet in Sunbury. Along with their great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, they have lots of water, soda, fresh roasted peanuts, and an unbelievable variety of pickles at the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and your favorite snacks, too. Get true refreshment all in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet in Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you back with us. Final half hour for the week here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Always great to be with all of you. We had a lot of fun this week. We had a little fun at the suit's expense. He was telling us all week that, you know, hey, Friday night means everything to me. It's, you know, it's about me. It's, you know, and we were kidding a little bit about that, although he did say it. Now, he did say it. I want to point out that he said it. Not only that, he was emphatic about it. But there's a reality to it. We had a little fun with it, with a little fake phony poll we did about, you know, where it was like really slanted against him. But that was just to have some fun, part of the entertainment of the show. But there's a reality to it. And it's an emotional night on senior night. There's so many barriers, you know, that you cross in the journey with your children. And I, you know, and look, I know. I have five children. I have four grandchildren. All right. Believe me. I know all the barriers, okay? I've gone through senior days. I've gone through weddings. I've gone through grandchildren. You know, so believe me, all of that. Now you're doing it all over again with your grandchildren. And you love every step of it. You really do. And each one brings with it a different emotion. Well, senior night's one of them. You know, senior night's one of them. You know, graduation will be the next one, high school graduation. Then they start college. Oh, boy. Then they graduate from college. You go, okay. Then they get a job. You go, oh, yeah. But we had a little fun with it. Look, there's a reality. It's emotional for the entire family to have senior night. And Dave Ritchie and I, Dave called the show earlier in the week. And Dave made a great point, because I actually had started the point, then Dave jumped in and emphasized it as well. When I played, we didn't have senior day. So my last game was Thanksgiving Friday, because it turned out we always played our crosstown rival on Thanksgiving morning. Well, it turned out we had a driving rainstorm on Thanksgiving that year, and they postponed the game one day, and we played on a Thanksgiving Friday, and we played at our crosstown rival. Well, the week before, you know, 11 days before, had been our final home game. And in fact, that year, I think we only played, we played 9 games. I think we only played 3 at home the whole season. That was it. We played 3 home games the entire season. That was it. But we got to, quote, senior day. There was no senior day. We ran out. We warmed up. We played Concord High School from West Hartford, Connecticut. So that we played them home. We beat them. I remember that. But there was no recognition of the band, no recognition of the cheerleaders, no recognition of us. My brother was on yesterday. Same thing when he played. He played in the 1960s, 40 years ago, Thanksgiving. 40 years ago, he played his last high school football game in a nothing-nothing tie, and he saved the game. I mean, he made the game-saving tackle in the game 40 years ago. We had nothing. I mean, no recognition, and didn't even think twice about it. Like, okay, that's it. We're not, okay, when's the next game? Okay, fine. Play the game. Hey, beat the crosstown rival, which we did my senior year. We won them, beat them 19-8. But that was it. There's no playoff or anything like that. We didn't have a playoff. We were done. We were done. So there was no recognition. Now it's a lot better. It's a lot better now where the band, all the senior members of the band get recognized. I mean, they put in so much, and the bands around here are so great. The cheerleaders get recognized. They put in so much time and effort, and they get recognized. You know, and the same thing with the parents for each. The football players, they put in so much time. They get recognized. Right? And then, you know, get the play. And then for the parents, it's just emotional for everybody. And it's a great emotion. It's just another great moment for families and towns. And I'm glad they have it now, because when I played, we didn't have it. All right, we're done. You can see how much it emotionally affected me, by the way. Time now for the sports bozo of the day. Look, I'm just not a fan of the color rush thing. First of all, the game's lousy to begin with between Tennessee and Jacksonville. See, the Eagles and Cowboys, you finally got a really good primetime game. Finally. One I really want to see. And we'll have it, by the way, on Eagle 107 as well on Sunday night. But, yeah, the color rush thing, I'm sorry. I'm not buying. It's another gimmick. My brother and I, we're gonna talk about the NFL a little bit later with him, like, next couple weeks. And my brother's right about a lot of things. Now, don't tell him I said that. All right, let's bring in Ryan Snyder, Rivals.com. Ryan, welcome. Great to have you with us, as always.
Hey, Steve. Good to talk to you, buddy.
All right, good to talk to you. There are different levels of impact. Saturday night, we'll get to the impact that you deal with. What kind of feel did you get from the boatload of recruits that were in on Saturday night?
I think boatload is definitely an understatement. You know, they weren't all out for this one, which, you know, heading into the week, you know, some people were saying, you know, could this set up to be something like what happened to Rutgers when, you know, they had 200-plus recruits and got destroyed. Now, I think we all had a pretty good idea that Penn State wasn't going to lose anything like that. But, you know, some fans are worried about it. So I think now, you know, when we look at it and everything that took place, it's very clear to everyone that this is why Penn State goes all out for events like this, because it is truly a win-win situation. Now, there was 150-some prospects in attendance. The actual list was actually somewhere around 180, 170, 180. Now, you know, some guys didn't all show up, but I think 150 is a pretty fair estimation. And, you know, from everything that I have gathered, it's a home run. Are guys lining up to commit today? No, it doesn't really always work that way. You know, guys still have to take official visits and whatnot. But tons and tons of prospects have had it. A lot of great reactions, everything from, you know, even just the tailgate scene, the theme around town, you know, obviously the game itself, the outcome. I mean, there's a lot of different angles that a lot of recruits saw positives in. And, you know, I think it's really going to help Penn State down the road.
But you've done this a lot, and, you know, and you've been around the block so many times. There isn't one be-all, end-all formula to this,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, fair enough.
I mean,
people go, oh, you lose this game, and all of a sudden it's like nobody's going to come here. You win this game, everybody's going to come here. It doesn't work that way.
Exactly. And actually, I'm really happy you brought this up, because when I do a lot of radio shows or talking to a mass crowd when it comes to recruiting in general, it's really a lot of people kind of try and dumb it down, and they ask, like, you know, oh, Penn State got crushed, you know, this week, or Penn State dominated this week. You know, what are, you know, how are recruits going to look at this? And my answer always is, where one thing I at least try to stress is that every recruit is different. You know, mom and dad see things differently. Every recruit sees things differently. You know, there's so many little factors that go into that major decision at the end of the day. So, you know, from the whiteout crowd, obviously everybody loved that. You know, the tailgates around town, you know, for guys that were new to Penn State, you know, seeing the atmosphere before the game, a lot of guys love that. You know, but when I look at this and when I parlay it to how it impacts 2017 guys that are going to be making decisions before, you know, the juniors and sophomores that were in attendance, I think the main thing to really take away from this is look, you know, this was a huge win, and obviously this is a true sign that Penn State's headed in the right direction. But if you throw back the pages a little bit and look at the Minnesota game, look at the Maryland game, just look at the general improvement that we've seen game in and game out now, you know, this is what guys really wanted to see. This is what Lamont Wade wants to see. This is what Tariq Castro-Fields wants to see. Dalen Wade-Perry, you know, we're talking about some of the top prospects that are left. You know, a lot of these guys want to see that, hey, not only is Penn State, you know, headed in the right direction, but they're steadily improving week in and week out. And again, just look at Minnesota, look at Maryland, and now look at this. You know, that's what these guys really wanted to see, and I think it's clear to everybody now that this is a positive for Penn State.
You were on the field as the final moments unfolded. Give me your perspective on what you were watching as everything unfolded, and then all of a sudden you got enveloped.
Yeah, enveloped is an understatement. You know, I was trying to get out of there, man. It was really fun for about a minute or two, just because I've never been in anything like that. And then it got a little out of hand. I think that's mainly because I was sober all day and everybody else loved it. But no, you know, it's big for Penn State. You know, Steve, I know you've seen every whiteout game here just like I have. I've never missed a whiteout game going back to 2004, 2005. And, you know, we've seen a lot of fun times in here and we've seen a lot of negative times, you know, in that atmosphere. You know, to have an upset like that, you know, there's only one thing that compares to it, and that's 2005. And to me, you know, this town really needed that. And it's kind of like what Franklin said, you know, it does kind of bring a town together in some degrees. Now, obviously, you know, from a national perspective, people look at that differently. But as someone who's lived here for a long time, has seen the ups, has seen the downs, you know, to just see the general emotion on not just students. You know, the students get a lot of pub because they're the majority of people that rush, but you know, I saw a lot of older adults, a lot of season ticket holders, you know, just basically crying, you know, because right. They've been waiting so long for that. So that's what really just kind of stuck with me the most, at least for the first couple of minutes, and then I was doing everything I could to find the tunnel.
What kind of breakdown in approximate numbers were there between high school seniors, high school juniors, and sophomores at the game?
Yeah, great question. Well, of course, you know, with the 2017 class, now, one thing I'll note real quick is that it is looking more and more likely that the 2017 class is going to have, you know, upwards of 20, 21, 22. Won't be a completely full class, but it'll have more than what it looked like, say, back in the summer where we were thinking it's probably going to be under 20. You know, Chance Sorrell's departure yesterday kind of shows the direction that some things are going. But anyway, at the end of the day, though, the 2017 class is still three-quarters of the way complete, and we are looking at something where, you know, only a handful of guys are going to finish this class out. So, obviously, because of that, the 2018 class, which is, you know, high school juniors, dominated. Now, you know, again, the list, I look at things a little differently. Now, the list itself is around 150 or so prospects, but you really have to kind of cut that in half or really look at the top 30, 40%. Those are the guys that are scholarship-worthy prospects. And out of those players, which is about 30, 40, 50 or so, I would say it was easily, you know, 50, 60, 70% underclassmen, which is, you know, 2018 and 2019, 2020. You know, we did see a couple, you know, solid official visitors this weekend. Larry Oladipo is a guy to mention. Jalen Harris out of Ohio, wide receiver, he's a guy to mention. But this this will have a really big impact on next year's class. I mean, that's who made up the bulk of the attendees. That's who made up the bulk of the guys that I've spoken with and have really raved about the event. So you're not going to see instant commitments, I guess, out of this, but you're going to see a lot of guys talking about this in 8 months from now saying, you know, I love this about Penn State, I love this about Penn State. And then seeing that atmosphere that one night, that really helped push me in that direction.
I know I've asked you this question before, but now that it is at least in a proposal stage, what are your thoughts on what they have proposed about early signing dates in college football?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of this, Steve. Now, look, there's a lot of things that have to be worked out. There's a lot of little tiny details that are very important details that have to be stressed. But as someone who is, I've done this for 7 years now, and there's a couple things that I've really picked up on. And look, I think my job, okay, as a media member, and seeing how recruiting has changed because of the impact of media, again, Rivals.com, Scout, 24/7, ESPN, all the newspapers, this has had as big of an impact on the recruiting world in general than anything else. And I know this kind of sounds off topic, but it's not. An early signing period is good for many reasons. Obviously, it cuts back on coaches contacting players. But one thing it's really going to help with is cutting back on the media. If I polled the top 50 prospects that were at Penn State's game the other night, I would say that at least 80% of them would say that the most annoying thing about this whole process is the constant contact, there are constant text messages and calls that people like myself are doing. And I know I'm a hypocrite in this degree.
But you have always been considered to be extremely judicious as to how you go about it, but you're only one person.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, let's look at this, for example. I mean, Rivals.com has a site for every big school. 24/7 has a site for every big school. Scout is the same way. You know, ESPN is in this game now. You know, just look at the Penn State beat. Penn Live, Altoona Mirror. A lot of these, Pittsburgh Coast, a lot of these people cover recruiting now. And the media impact on all of it is becoming something that needs to be, I think, talked about more, because it is a major impact on how guys go about this process, and it impacts guys making early decisions. So just to tally this all back to an early signing period, what it would be very nice about this is that it will allow guys to get out of the process if they want to get out of it. Look, recruiting freshmen and sophomores, that's here to stay. That's not going to change. It's only getting earlier and earlier, and it's not going to change. So what this will allow guys to do is to check out of the process if they feel as if they have done their due diligence their sophomore year, their junior year. And that's important because, again, this isn't just coaches contacting these guys every day. There's a lot of media members that are really making this into a frustrating process in some degrees. And I really think an early signing period would help with that overall blitz of calls and texts that these guys receive. I could do a 45-minute show on this. I could go all day.
I understand that. And what about the cutback to 10 camps in the off season?
It's good. I have mixed feelings on that. I think it's good, and I think there's going to be guys that are impacted positively and guys that are impacted negatively. It really just kind of depends on the recruit and where they stand. At that time in the summer. Again, you know, a lot of these guys are really trying to get their name out there more. But at the same time, a lot of those guys, maybe haven't come to the full realization at that time that they're not Division I prospects. So maybe they won't be paying as much down the road. I mean, there's a lot of pluses and minuses with it. I think it's good for the general scheme as that it'll allow the whole camp world to not totally get out of hand. We were only seeing more and more camps being added. So it's good from that sense. You know, it will hurt a few prospects here and there, but this is something that can't go on for 30, 40 days. Like it's a real grind on the coaches too. You know,
that's actually been my primary feeling about it. You know what? They need time too in life.
They do. They do. You know, all they get is that July dead period, really. I mean, it's work. every other day, you know, in the off season. So, you know, the coaches need to be with their families too. And June used to be a month where they could kind of do that. And ever since the satellite camp started, that's been out the window. So I think this is a good thing for definitely a good thing from their perspective.
Ryan, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for the perspective. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Steve. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Ryan Snyder, Blue White Illustrated, and Rivals.com. Ryan does a tremendous job of covering recruiting. I cannot talk about recruits. I can't mention names, anything like that. He covers all of that and much more and does a great job. And not only that, he does it judiciously. And I'm glad we're able to talk about the rules, because James Franklin talked about this last night, about the early signing day. One of the fans in the crowd, the fans ask a lot of great questions. They really do. I mean, great questions. And one was asked last night about the addition of a 10th coach, which is something I have not delved into yet on the show. But I have talked about the early signing period, and I have talked about satellite camps. I haven't talked about the 10th coach yet, which I'll talk about here in just a moment. But the early signing period, that's why I want to ask Ryan about that. And James talked about it last night. He says, look, he says, there's certain people that are going to want to go to Penn State. He says, or other schools. He says, why should I waste my time recruiting somebody where it's pretty obvious where they're going to go? Why not just let them sign? And then you can then lock in on other people that are going to make later decisions. And I completely agree with that sentiment. That's why I've always been in favor of the early signing period. Now, there'll be unintended consequences with it. So let's not... We're going to have to weed through the unintended consequences. The 10th coach is, I think, would be great, because you look at the numbers that are in college football and you look at the numbers in college basketball. College basketball has a greater percentage of coaches per player than college football does. And a 10th coach would be somebody you could hire, maybe a special teams coordinator that could also be a help on defense, because mostly the split among coaches in college with the 9 coaches, usually 5 on offense with 1 as a special teams coordinator and 4 on defense. Well, now you could go 5 and 5, and having a 10th coach, I think, would be a big plus for staffs and not just in recruiting, but how you divvy up the work. All right, today's show is brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for the weekend now. Great to be in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Enjoy the weekend. Talk to you tomorrow from West Lafayette, beginning at 10:30 on News Radio 1070 WKOK.